Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dynamite from the post rest in sight. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know. Let them know.
Open house week continues. You know, we've been on our best behavior. We've cleaned up all the rooms for everyone to peruse, take a look around, see what's happening. What is this thing called? The double shot. I've heard of Rewind Away, but what is it like in actuality? Well, you will find out on Thursday, because we're dropping our latest show on the cafe this week that everyone on the free tier at the cafe gets access to, because Wei and I are traveling back 32 years to Survivor Series 1993, where we are going to be chatting about the All-Americans against the Foreign Fanatics, Shawn Michaels and his three knights against the Hart family with Patriarch Stu. And Wei, I've got some late-breaking news. You know, sometimes on Rewind Away, we do like to consult some of the text that has come out over the years. And always a reliable one is the good old Hitman book by Bret Hart, which is going to be the subject of book club next month. But this might be the only chance to go straight from the heart. Ooh. The Bruce Hart tome.
Ooh, love, and we will get lovely.
We will get Bruce Hart and his thoughts on being passed over for younger brother Owen for the big match with Bret. And how did Bruce find out about the fact that he was the original pick? All that to come on Rewind Away. I don't want to speak too much about Survivor Series 1993, because I don't want to spoil anything for Wei, who I guarantee you has not started this show, but he's about to celebrate Thanksgiving as soon as tonight is done. And good luck, Wei.
I'm one match in of five, all right? So don't you worry, okay? Plenty of time before now and when we record tomorrow, before we talk about this. But yeah, no, a new generation show, one of my favorite eras of professional wrestling, even though it might not have been the most lucrative period of this company's existence, but one that, you know, still carries a lot of warm, fuzzy memories for me. So it was really nice having already seen the first match. To see Razor Ramon and his feud with IRS. And why exactly was it Shawn Michaels and his knights?
Well, spoiler, they don't explain that on the broadcast, but we will. And also, Bobby Heenan's last pay-per-view before leaving the company as well.
Okay.
Yeah. As he's on the call with Vince McMahon as well. So that's coming out on Thursday. And we're also offering the XL versions of all the shows this week. So you're getting this show in its entirety, which is how we do the show each and every week, as well as Rewind to SmackDown coming up on Friday night, where we always kick off the show with the news of the week. Today, talking about the move by AEW to place All Out to an afternoon time slot, as well as its deal with HBO Max, where it's going to be offering its pay-per-views beginning with the September 20th show, and also going through all the ramifications of that decision, and John Jones with his latest charges being dismissed in Albuquerque, New Mexico, talking about NXT from Tuesday night, as well as We've got an Impact coming up, a live edition of Impact on Thursday night, and then SmackDown Friday night, which is going to be a very big show in Chicago. So about a half hour of news off the top, and we'll be doing feedback and questions at the end of our Dynamite review. How are you enjoying Open House Week, Wei?
I'm liking it fine. Yeah. I'm enjoying, I guess, the idea that we're doing this for at least a bigger audience than usual.
All right, let's move on over to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And before we get into the review, I do want to shine a spotlight on the latest reporting from Brandon Thurston and Jack Wannan, who have a follow-up tonight on the ongoing protests outside the 2300 Arena, which Tony Khan did not want to comment on during the ROH call last week. But they have spoken to several people involved in the situation from the 2300 Arena and IATSE local number 8 as well, that have been continuing to protest. And also, like, what has been conveyed by one of the stagehands that is working on the shows about what payment they are receiving as well, and what is at the heart of IATSE's complaints, mainly with the venue, but also explaining why they are choosing to picket while AEW specifically is there for this residency, which goes for another 3 events through the end of next week. So great story there, as well as one from Felix Gouty from France, who attended a lot of the local independent shows that were going on this past weekend. And I found this to be a really interesting piece about all the different shows that were happening, the impact when a WWE comes to town, and getting some interviews as well for this piece. It's a really interesting look into the French independent scene, which I'm sure a lot of people are not as familiar with. So I found this to be a really interesting piece that Felix put together.
It was really, I mean, the first any sort of media that I've seen shine a light on what feels like a pretty, you know, like big independent wrestling scene over there. So great reporting from Felix. And this actually got a lot of attention on our Twitter from people that were, I guess, of the scene. So, you know, you look at that rabid fan base for these crowds, it only makes sense that there's a huge wrestling audience for even independent wrestling, and a lot of anti-WWE sentiment maybe in some of these indie wrestling goers as well, recognizing, in fact, like somebody chanting, what did they chant? What did
we have? No money.
We have no money. Yeah. Yeah.
I like the sound of that.
So basically, we don't have any more money. On a plus de tunes was one of the chants, all right, at one of these shows where this audience very much recognizes that they are being gouged by this WWE regime.
It's business. So, yes, you can check out both of those pieces up now at postwrestling.com. Another sellout at the 2300 Arena, WrestleTix listing 916 capacity. And we are getting right into things. They did do the Taz induction before the show. They showed the banner. So I would imagine that that's going to be something they add to YouTube over the next day or two. I'm sure people will get a chance to see that.
Disappointed?
Disappointed
that that wasn't something for air?
Personally, I think sometimes you could break up the matches with something like that. And I think it's nice to do stuff like that on TV, because I think it would be interesting. But, you know, obviously it would have taken out one of these matches and they have their priorities. But yeah, I think that could have worked on the show. The benefit to doing it that way is, I'm sure if it was a lengthier segment, like, they wouldn't have been under the gun to keep it to a certain length. But I really like when they announced they were going to do the Steve McMichael tribute on TV on Collision a number of months ago. I think stuff like that can work really well on television.
I think so too. I mean, but I also understand wanting to use Dynamite, like, and it's very sort of valuable real estate to try to, you know, future your talents and to build to your pay-per-view.
So Gabe Kidd opens the show and he's searching for Darby Allin, and Darby shows up, jumping him in the ring, and pulls Gabe's shoulder into the turnbuckle. And it's Darby just going like a million miles an hour here. He hits a coffin drop off the top to the floor. Yuta shows up and he pulls out, Darby pulls out a skateboard with thumbtacks attached, uses it on Yuta, who's got tacks right seared into his back. And the rest of the Death Riders show up at ringside when the lights go out and Hook's signal appears and he comes out to his new theme. I don't know if this quite hits in terms of this menace that's coming out like he's New Jack.
I personally like it. I mean, I know it, the reactions are certainly mixed, but I like the fact that it's different.
It is very different. But we finally got some follow-up to Hook's ouster from the ops when he got hurt, because Joe and Hobbs run past Hook, who looks visibly upset, and he would follow this up later backstage. But then Willow shows up. She's battling Shafir, and it's a crazy brawl. And we go to the back where Kid and Darby have made their way. Kid gets out a reliable hammer, and I'm sure Darby's instructions were swing with everything you've got. I'll get out of the way. And he did. And then threw powder into Kid's eyes and grabs the dreaded rag, which the announcers identified must have some chemical substance on it.
You don't think it was just a microfiber cloth, maybe like a Swiffer? You don't think it was that?
I'm imagining Gabe Kidd was killed here in the moment. Kidd is placed into a body bag, chained to the back of this truck, and there is no cut here. Like, there is no alternate angle or anything. We just see one continuous shot of Gabe Kidd put into this body bag and driven off hundreds of feet into the distance, and we never see Gabe Kidd again on this show. Darby would return, and that welcome. And the best part about this is we go back to the announcers, who all share a chuckle over this. I was like,
that Darby Allin.
Oh, that Darby. Yeah. You can never tell what he's going to do next.
Yeah, this is pretty wild, man. To just see without any sort of like camera trickery, you know, as far as we can tell, like we literally saw in one take a man get put into a body bag, it'd be dragged out of a scene on pavement in a body bag. So, I mean, I'm hoping that there's some level of, I guess, protective layer for Gabe Kidd's sake that would make this hurt a lot less than I think it would seem on camera.
Or not, and it's a great story.
I hope. I wonder how Hiroshi Tanahashi in New Japan feel seeing one of their guys.
You know, if Hulk Hogan was around, he would remind everyone of the time he had to take. Remember on the back of the Undertaker's motorcycle? He got dragged backstage.
I do. Yes, I do. Well, listen, they're totally a different spot. Okay, this is hard pavement, man. And they think about all those New Japan diehards who are upset enough that Gabe Kidd missed the G1 only to do that match with Forbidden Door. How would they react to seeing their guy who vowed to never leave New Japan take a spot like this on Dynamite?
You're never going to see me in buttfuck nowhere eating catering chained to the back of a Ford pickup.
He must be having fun, though, isn't he?
It sure looked like it based on that.
Does Gabe Kidd stay? Well, come January or whatever his contract ends, do you expect Kidd to make his way over?
I would be pretty sure that they would make a big play for a Gabe Kidd, and I think he could transition really well. He's in a very good position with the Death Riders, and
because we're past Forbidden Door season right now. We're past the point of them needing to, like, being obligated to, you know, integrate Gabe Kidd into their storylines, yet they continue to feature him, and you know that Tony must love this guy.
Yeah. I mean, he does have the match coming up with Shingo next month, as I recall. I believe it's with Shingo. He's on the Destruction show for sure. I could see this Darby match. Like, it certainly feels like Darby Moxley is your pay-per-view direction. I could see this on that big 3-hour show. Like, this feels like a big enough match that you could hold it off for a couple of weeks before you get to it. This should be kind of like a prelude to Darby and Moxley later that week.
Yeah.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
They promoted the HBO Max deal, and then we go to Mercedes Moné and Alex Windsor for the TBS title. And this was Alex Windsor trying to use every possible angle to use her sharpshooter to varying degrees of success. I would have loved a watch along with Brett assessing the application of this hold.
I would have loved to watch along with Brett watching the Darby Allin dragging Gabe Kidd out in a pickup truck scene.
Couldn't be any worse than working with another guy. But so Moné drives her, Moné gets her knee driven into the apron, and we get a sharpshooter through the bottom rope. Moné escapes and uses an apron bomb. There's chance of Boston sucks, and Windsor attacks the neck, goes for a sharpshooter in the center, but it's reversed into the statement maker, and Windsor gets to her feet, but then right into a crucifix bomb. Justin Roberts comes on and gives us the 10-minute warning. So, I mean, that is kind of setting everyone off track that this could go the distance, which it would not. Windsor reapplies the sharpshooter, but it breaks, and then they roll to the floor where she just holds on for like an ankle lock on Mercedes as Moné starts tapping on the floor, but obviously does not count on the floor. Windsor comes off the buckle, is caught into the statement maker, rolls to a backstabber, and then Windsor connects with the lariat. Both are down. We get a Made in Japan by Windsor for a two count, and then Moné with an iconoclasm into the statement maker, kicks off the rope, and Windsor then manages to get out by hooking the leg for a cover. Moné kicks out, and as Windsor goes for her like 50th attempt at the sharpshooter, it's blocked as Mercedes has now had plenty of time to scout this and rolls her up, catching her for the three count, and Mercedes retains the TBS title.
I thought it was a very strong match, as most matches with Mercedes Moné tend to be. She, I think, is on such an incredible run right now. And I think for me, you know, Alex Windsor, in such a short amount of time, she's been really well integrated into the division, to the point where she just doesn't feel like she's a mid-card fixture, but somebody you could buy. And I would even say look forward to seeing in title matches against somebody the stature of a Mercedes Moné. We're talking about somebody in Alex Windsor that I would say the majority of the wrestling audience, even an AEW audience, may have never heard of, what, like 3-4 months ago? You know, to the point now where she feels like not more than a mainstay. And I think that's because she's not only been receiving the opportunity, she's more than lived up to it. In ring, as a personality, on the microphone, she is incredibly well-rounded. So this kind of, to me, felt like the end of her run with Moné. But I would say she definitely took more than enough advantage of this spotlight to definitely make a bigger name of herself.
15 minutes and 3 seconds, a very good match between the two. And Moné is gloating with the belt. Windsor offers her hand, but instead Mercedes gives her the finger. Stealing Okada's a gimmick here. So Windsor, you won't believe what she went for. She went for the sharpshooter, but is hit with a belt shot and then put into the statement maker. And all of a sudden, we hear the music, and it is the return of Riho, who appears. Double stomp off the top to Mercedes, drop kicks her out of the ring, and holds up the TBS title. We have not seen Riho since July of 2024.
It's a long time.
14 months.
What's the reason? Injury?
I believe so. She hasn't wrestled at all in that period. So
wow. That's a long time.
It's a very long time that she's been out, but not enough to avoid getting a title shot immediately. So she will get the title match with Mercedes at All Out. This is the play, okay? Miss some time, and you just work on that double stomp, okay?
Was there any justification for the title match, or what? She double stomped and picked up the title, I guess. You don't need one for the TBS title, do you? You don't need one for any of these titles at this point.
You do your angle on the home network, you'll get that network's title shot. That's how you do things, okay? Perfect synchronicity here from Rio and Mercedes.
Yeah, she to me is she really does at this point feel like a legacy name of AEW. So I mean, she's the first champion and has not necessarily advanced her ranking at all since that initial run, but remains, I would say, like pretty well thought of, you know, and at least enough to garner some interest. But I will say, like, the division is very different now from when really she was, like, at the top. And I think they still have she's great in ring, but I think they could still do so much to develop a character and develop a personality.
That, to me, has been my biggest complaint, is that she is, like, almost the poster child for just throwing out of nowhere and put into these title matches, and she just about always has a great match, but it's one where she's there to have the good match and lose, and then almost always disappears after, and just gets kind of plugged into these holes to fill. I'm sure this is going to be a great match. It's just, you know, she just generally always gets over with the crowd. So I'm hoping in these 2 weeks they can add some substance to this return, and not just make it just the title defense of the month for Mercedes.
Yeah.
Renee spoke with Joe and Hobbs, and in comes Hook. And Hook says, "I don't need either of you coming out to help me. You replaced me before my body was even cold," indicating he has been resurrected. And Joe says, "You know, opportunity came calling. And you know what our names are. We're the Ops. We're all about opportunities." I was like, yeah, well played.
I didn't know that. That's what Ops meant.
Well,
they're the opportunities.
So. We're the opportunists. And Hobbs stepped up, so we handled our own business tonight. We weren't out there to help you, and I'm the one who made the call. So it's me that made this decision, and one day you're going to need our help, and when you do, we'll still have your back.
I really like the scene. You know, like, this was, I thought, a loose end that they were never going to tie up. Like, I thought there could have been a chance that they would have never tied it up. But instead, like, I felt very satisfied with just, like, what, this 2-minute interaction, because it conveyed to you that, for one thing, that brief interaction that they had months ago when Hook came back just to kind of, like, you know, give that sort of eye to the Ops, that was not for nothing, right? They didn't forget about that. That happened. You can assume tensions were there since then. And what you got tonight was almost like a sort of, you got at present sort of like months after digested version of what the relationship is like at present, where, you know, they're clearly not friends. They haven't been friends for a very long time. And here's Joe explaining that, despite how you may feel, we still have your back. So he's always been a great older brother figure for Hook. And with the Hobbs and Hook dynamic, you know, dating back from the Team Taz days, that also is something very interesting to be explored as well. So I hope they continue to be revolving around each other, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
Ricochet and the Gates, they issue a challenge to the Hurt Syndicate for All Out and state that they've been relying on their past legacies, and for us, we have our careers ahead of us. And Toa Leona takes credit that Brodito left with your tag belts at Forbidden Door, but we ended your reign. We're not washed up. And Ricochet says it's a challenge. It's not a challenge. It's a demand. And this would be accepted later. So we're going to get a 6-man with MVP included for All Out.
So, like, you know, I thought there would have been a chance that we'd get Brodito versus Hurt Syndicate. They have no connection.
Patience.
No, they've got no connection whatsoever. Brodito certainly do not get any credit.
These tag belts are of no consequence to the Hurt Syndicate. Like, they're gone, whatever. Yeah.
Brodito doesn't even get the credit for ending the reign. Now it's like they're attributing it to the Gates of Agony.
We're going to get our heat back on the Gates of Agony for our loss that we were not even within striking distance of the ring. They showed the banner for Taz, and Mark Briscoe comes out, talks about the history of this building where him and his brother fell in love with pro wrestling, and his focus is on Kyle Fletcher and the TNT title. Says Don Callis looks like Elton John dressed as a prosthetic penis for Halloween, and calls out any Don Callis family member to face for the title shot against Kyle Fletcher. So Callis comes out with Lance Archer and the heavy artillery, Rocky Romero. And Romero, he's getting ready. He's ready to fight, but instead Don Callis makes the executive decision to let Archer take the match instead of Rocky Romero. So Rocky could just watch this match. And then the winner, he says your opponent for the title shot will be Takeshita on Saturday at Collision, but Briscoe has come here to fight. So this is where he volunteers Archer for the impromptu match as a Konosuke Takeshita also came out with his MC Hammer pants. I want to know who he's going out for as Halloween.
Maybe borrowed from his wife.
Possible.
Who's kind of made a name for those parachute pants. And she. Yeah. Takeshita versus Briscoe is a bit of an interesting match to make because you would assume Briscoe has to beat anybody he faces en route to facing Kyle Fletcher, right? I wouldn't necessarily put think of Takeshita being in that sort of setup role, having just won the G1. So, I mean, it's not like the G1 is a...
Are you sure we're getting Briscoe winning this match on Saturday?
Are you suggesting...
Because Kyle looks pretty busy. It looks like he's got plans, and yeah. I see the match being Mark Briscoe and MJF. Like, that's the match I think they get to at All Out, and it could be MJF getting involved here.
You're absolutely right. It would just be very unusual to have somebody say they're trying to face a champion and I'm trying to beat this guy to get there, and then he actually loses to the setup guy. But I mean, when it's Takeshita, you can buy that loss.
You know, if Mark were to win this match on Collision, I could see Mark bypassing the TNT title and he goes right to Zack Sabre Jr. at King of Pro Wrestling. That's the match.
He wins the G1, basically.
I just saw those Bushiroad financials. Mark Briscoe just in New Japan for an extended stay.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So we get the impromptu match between Mark Briscoe and Lance Archer. I think Mark Briscoe was chokeslammed about 100 times in this match. He also got cut up early on. They go through the picture-in-picture. Archer stops a J-driller, hits a buckle bomb, chokeslams him for two. Briscoe then bites him off of the turnbuckle into a sunset bomb and wins with the froggy bow. Simple TV match. He obviously had to win this one going into Saturday. And yes, him and Takeshita on Collision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Timeless Toni Storm was shown earlier in the day inside of the empty arena. She goes over the history and debauchery that went down in this building and promises to be the most batshit bitch that ever pissed in this sink, looking off screen. No forever champion or belt collector could take my title, and she is pledging for every woman with a pulse to step up and give me your best, worst, everything in between. But don't worry, God doesn't judge. That's my job.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I didn't read any indication of who her next opponent would be. Like, this felt like one of those sort of bridging promos between her programs.
Rio could have come and just had her pick of the titles to go for. It's like instant True. Access to either championship at this moment.
Yeah. You have any prediction? For her?
I mean, it could literally be anyone. Jamie Hayter's kind of involved in another program. Doesn't really make sense for her. I don't know. You could literally pick anyone. There's no obvious person that jumps out at me. It feels like someone fresh that they're going to put in, and it feels as though it's going to be just to do a title match with Toni Storm. I kind of feel it's going to be like Mercedes and Riho, where hopefully it's a good match, but I don't know how much you're going to build up this challenger in 2 weeks.
So much of that, they have a very deep mid-card mix right now, but they all seem to be involved with each other and out of the Toni Storm orbit, but of course they can take anybody out of it.
And they've got some dominant champions as well that it's the wrestling is not the issue, but I think you do want to build up some credible challengers. I mean, even when you're talking about Toni Storm with Mercedes, with Hangman, with Kyle Fletcher, these are Okada, of course. That's kind of the struggle is building up those compelling challengers. Renee interviewed Harley Cameron and Chris Statlander. Harley laments that the mask didn't do anything as she still got busted open in her last match. So Chris rips the mask off and says that the wrath is within you. And Harley notes that they are undefeated as a team and issues a challenge to Brodito, which I think this audience would love. But Chris says, no, we're sticking with the Triangle of Madness and Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. So it looks like all of those women are tied up at the moment. So maybe that's going to eliminate some candidates. Yuta walks in telling her that the Death Riders have their back. And Shafir walks in, stares into Chris Statlander, and Chris responds that, tell your leader that we got his message.
Mm-hmm. So
the continued tease of the Death Riders with Chris Statlander. Maybe they're secretly recruiting Harley Cameron. Maybe this is all just a ploy.
That would be a really interesting mix, like on the level of like a Sami Zayn in the Bloodline, you know, suddenly throwing Harley Cameron in there.
Harley playing off of Marina Shafir.
That would be very fascinating. But I am still curious about like where all of this is leading, because I don't think it's very obvious, you know.
I think we're getting this Blood and Guts match next summer.
Sure, sure. But I mean, like within that.
I mean, in a year from now, I think they're just going to keep. They're going to keep us. They're going to string us along for another like 10 months.
You know, I think like Cameron and Statlander have something good going. Of course, that means that one could turn on the other. But I could also see them sticking together and Statlander rejecting the Death Riders outright. And that would facilitate a spot for Shafir to bring somebody else in.
Yeah, there's several of these characters where it just feels like there's multiple stories going on. Like you have Chris in a team with Harley Cameron, recruited by the Death Riders, and this long-term reunion story with Willow Nightingale. And you can facilitate all these stories to be interwoven together, but that does take some careful booking to just make it all logical and play out in a natural fashion.
Well, we've seen this company be able to juggle.
They can certainly manage this.
Mm-hmm.
Bandido and Brody King against Claudio and Wheeler Yuta. Man, Brodito were incredibly popular here. Bandido, I think this man has to be the most confident babyface in the world because there are no others I could think of that would dare do the Macarena in 2025. This guy just felt after that Hechicero match, I can do no wrong for these fans. Might be the leading contender for Wrestler of the Year. I mean, he's putting a strong campaign together. Bandido is thrown out of the ring, and they take over with Bandido. Bandido tries a Dragon Rana, which Claudio catches, and Bandido turns into a Code Red. Audience goes wild for that one. And then they set up for the Monkey Flip 450 when Shafir grabs Bandito's leg to prevent it, and Yuta capitalizes with a missile drop kick. King fights with John Moxley on the floor, and King gets rammed into the post as the challengers land a rocket launcher on Bandito. He kicks out, and then a giant swing is delivered to Bandito into the sit-out drop kick. And my God, was Brody King late to make this save. And the only thing that saved this was that they were at the far side of the ring where he was entering in, because this guy was so late for this kick out. And Darby returns to the arena. We have no idea what's happened to Gabe Kidd and never got an update. He attacks John Moxley, and it's Brody King using a forearm smash from the floor that sets up Yuta for the 21-plex with Bandito scoring the pin. A great tag match for these two as Brodito making their first title defense after taking the vacated tag belts.
Very strong match. Great first title defense for Brodito, and I really do wonder if like they were always the ones that, you know, were supposed to win this tournament and win these championships off of.
I would be very surprised if this was where they were going versus just feeling like FTR. They were the hot team. Oh, 100%. I think that it was going towards FTR. And I still feel that match is a lot bigger with the tag titles. But I mean, Brodito, you do really have something special with these two. It's really clicking, and I think having more Bandito on AEW programming is a great thing, especially now where, you know, you have been hit with some injuries.
More Brody King too.
Yes, you know? Yeah, Brody King too. I mean, he really benefited from the House of Black like moving on, and he has landed on his feet, and he's arguably like this has been his strongest run in AEW is what we're in the midst of now.
Yeah.
Moxley just chases after Darby through the arena, and that was the last we had of those two for the night. Renee interviews Kazuchika Okada, and he is asked about the ongoing tension with Konosuke Takeshita. He says he may be He is the rainmaker. That makes him the top dog in the Don Callis family. Bitch.
Yeah. So when are we getting this match? Could it be as soon as All Out or beyond? What do you think?
They're certainly intensifying this. It would feel very sudden to do this so quickly.
Well, could Okada be involved somehow in the Mark Briscoe match, costing Takeshita, giving, you know, a reason for Takeshita to lose?
There's definitely outs between Okada being introduced and MJF with Briscoe. There's definitely possibilities there that I can see it leading to. Yeah. Some kind of interference of some sort.
It's just that they're driving this like pretty hard already, you know, between
they are,
Okada
but this should be like a big match, and it's like it's the two guys in the middle of the group. Like it's yeah, two weeks just seems very quick to do this one, but I certainly don't rule it out because they are they're going much more than just subtle as they had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt Syndicate, they accept the challenge, and MVP says that Ricochet went from a dynamic performer into a whiny hater and remarks that the Gates better not let Ricochet turn them into punchlines and that MVP is going to lace up his boots and go into combat with Lashley and Benjamin, and he's looking forward to punching you in your disrespectful bitch-made mouth.
Funnier when you say it.
Disrespectful bitch made mouth.
More intimidating when you say it.
Bitch made. What is bitch made?
Well, I guess like I don't know. Calling his
like
mother
the person
a bitch?
That made his mouth is the bitch. Like is that the substance of the insult? Not so much him being the bitch, but his creator is the bitch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it also just might be one of those things that sounds cool when put together. You know.
Okay.
So this seems to me like you're going to get the Hurt Syndicate as baby faces in this match against, Gates of Agony and Ricochet, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably the direction you'll probably get for this one.
So we'll have like a very clear cut, hey, let's cheer for the Hurt Business type of like.
Oh yeah, Ricochet's atmosphere. Getting murdered in this match. Yeah, yeah. I think this is going to be a very straightforward affair.
Yeah, sure.
Adam Copeland comes out, and he's immediately attacked by FTR. In record time, Dax gets cut open. How many people got accidentally cut open on this show? Between Mark Briscoe, Dax Harwood, and later Kyle Fletcher. Mm-hmm. So they're fighting off security. Christian is involved, so the four just brawl and brawl. But then we get the heavy artillery. It's the ROH extras that are out. They make it very clear this is not the AEW locker room. This is the ROH locker room that has come. And we get Adam Priest, who's getting into FTR's face after the tag match that him and JD Drake had with FTR on Saturday. It looks like Adam Priest is going to be getting something out of this. One of the dudes took a spike pile driver, and then it's Priest that tries to fight them off and actually got some Adam Priest chance. So I think this guy owed a debt of gratitude to these 916 Philadelphia fans, because I don't know how many arenas would have been chanting for Adam Priest, but good for him. He's really solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. That was our setup for the tag match.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really know much about Adam Priest, and therefore I didn't think that there was much here that offered like a significant change or moved the story along, but as a way to, I guess, introduce somebody new into this feud with Copeland Christian, I suppose it was worthwhile.
Daniel Garcia video. He saw John Moxley wipe out his heroes, and they show clips of their previous matches, so we get the rematch on Saturday on Collision. FTR and Big Stoker backstage. Dax is still bleeding, and they promise a day of reckoning, and then Adam Priest walks in, and Cash just runs him down, and this sets up a match for Saturday, which will feature this involvement with Adam Priest with FTR, Mark Briscoe against Takeshita, Daniel Garcia and Moxley, and another all-star eight-woman tag, Timeless Tony Storm, Mina Shirakawa, Chris Statlander, and Harley Cameron against the Triangle of Madness and Megan Bain, with all others banned from ringside. This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. Mercedes and Rio is officially announced for All Out. And then we go to highlights of the Young Bucks meet and greet from earlier in the day, including an extended URL for youngbucks.net/many other
characters. Where the JPEG would usually be. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's replaced with a...
This one was okay. URL. This one kind of felt like a, hey, we got to put something on this show for the Young Bucks. What are everyone's ideas? Like, let's do the Virgil deal. Wrestling superstars. Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, and the Jet Speed against Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander, and the Young Bucks. Early on, Omega and Page are working together against Josh Alexander as a retooled tag team. We go through the commercial break. Page and Omega manage a pop-up German combo onto Kyle Fletcher. And then the Buckshot gets stopped by Josh Alexander on the floor. And Alexander and Bayley got their TNA reunion here in the midst of the ring. Bayley misses a moonsault with the double knees on the edge. And then Knight hits this leaping clothesline to Josh Alexander on the barricade as he was about to lift up Bayley. In comes Nick for a double set of Meltzer drivers, one to Kevin Knight in the ring, and then a follow-up to Mike Bayley on the floor. And we go to a second commercial break. We come back. Tony Schiavone at 9:53 p.m. states we've taken our final commercial break and we have 40 minutes left in the time limit. Would we be going?
Yeah.
I would say the commercial inventory was not well managed if that was the case, if we're going to have a 40-minute uninterrupted rest of this show. Bayley, this match is just flowing at this point. He hits a poison Rana to Alexander off of the in the ring, tags in Omega, and it's Fletcher and Omega, which was excellent for the short time that it lasted. Omega stops a brainbuster, hits a series of snapdragons, and then it's the face off with Omega, Hangman, and the Bucks standing in the ring. The crowd's going wild, and Nick tries for a buckshot of his own, which Page ducks, and Nick ends up hitting his brother. Page hits the lariat to Nick, V-trigger to Matt, and then they go for the buckshot V-trigger, but it's stopped by Nick, and you nearly get Hangman and Omega crashing into each other as another callback to their tag days. There's a tombstone by Fletcher onto Hangman for a two count, and then Knight comes in, misses with the UFO splash, or at least lands on the knees of Fletcher, and it's Bayley with a poison Rana to Fletcher off the second turnbuckle. The Bucks are in with super kicks, and we get an indie taker to Kevin Knight, and then as Josh holds them in position, hands them off to Kyle for the brainbuster, and it's Kyle Fletcher pinning Kevin Knight in a spectacular match that goes 22 minutes and 12 seconds.
Incredible. Absolutely. Like, I mean, it had the sort of, I guess, expectations of like a mid card like all-star eight-man tag, except you had like some main eventers in here, and specifically the team of Page and Omega paired with the Bucks. Just I thought delivered, I think, what you wanted out of it. Unbelievable performances from everybody, but you have to love that they gave the focus to Kyle Fletcher here.
Yeah.
In the end, especially with the post-match angle.
Yeah, he looked great in here. Like, him and Kenny were the time it lasted. Like, yeah. All these connections. Like, Bayley stood out in a big way. I mean, you had the Bucks as kind of the glue of this whole thing. Hangman and Omega working together. I mean, this was a really, really fun eight-man.
But Fletcher, Omega, Fletcher, Page, like, these are big matches, you know, just in these brief interactions that you could tell. Speedball and Knight, I think, were just... they're so awesome as well. You know, both of them are able to just maintain like the highest in-ring standards for an AEW at present moment. And it's why they're always a welcome addition that you could just stick on any sort of any one of these all-star eight-man tags, despite the fact that they're pretty much, you know, there to lose every single time. But you're always excited for what they're doing in-ring.
Afterwards, heavy angle with the Don Callis family attacking the babyfaces. Archer and Rocky Romero join in. Insurmountable odds now with Rocky joining the fray. A chair is opened in the ring as Kyle hits Hangman with a brainbuster onto the chair. Omega leaps on top of Hangman to try and shield him as they set up a table on the floor. And it's Kyle hitting a chair to the midsection of Kenny Omega. And we are reminded about the 10 inches of intestine that was removed from Kenny's body. And then Kyle suplexes Kenny off the edge of the apron through the table and Kyle just slashes open his shoulder. There was a lot of blood here that he was trying to conceal, but there was a lot here. They place Kenny into a cervical collar, and it's just a heavy heat angle with Fletcher holding up the TNT title and leaving this a little open-ended of what direction they're going in. I thought, like, the natural is a tag match, and I don't think the tag would be the strongest for the pay-per-view, but you could also be going a singles route as well here, but they were really playing up Omega and Paige, like, teaming together.
It throws a big wrench into, I think, what we were expecting coming off of last week's Dynamite, in that we might have been expecting a Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page match at All Out. This seems to indicate it'd be Kyle Fletcher versus one of the two, or a tag team scenario. And of course, also in there is Mark Briscoe campaigning for a match with Kyle Fletcher. So how does that all play into the next 2 weeks leading into All Out? It's I mean, certainly coming off of the show, you're less expecting a Kenny Omega Hangman Page match, you know, to be at All Out. I don't expect Kenny to be back probably until the pay-per-view, if that, like, you know. This just kind of felt like another way to write the man off for a few weeks.
Yeah. I would not say, like, the tag match would be spectacular, but I just don't feel for your pay-per-view. Like, I think you need to go a lot bigger than that, than putting your world champion into a tag match. But they could also go a singles route here. If, like, it seemed to be more the focus was, like, Kyle and Kenny, especially with, like, the closing shot and holding up the belt. But, yeah, I would hope by this time next week we kind of have this, like, main event scene figured out for All Out. I was kind of thinking we'd be there by the end of tonight.
I am honestly very curious about, like, the state of Kenny Omega. Obviously, you see him in a match like this tonight, and he still looks great, right? But I feel like he's taken a lot of time off, you know, and it's probably for good reason. But, like, can we expect singles matches with him that frequently anymore, you know? Or is a tag team scenario maybe a better way to present him for his standard? I just don't know.
That was the case, though, like, you've just kind of reintroduced him and Kota Ibushi. Like, that to me would have been maybe the direction to go with those two together rather than your world champion.
Yeah.
I just think they're overestimating like a pay-per-view attraction of Kenny and Hangman teaming up together. I mean, you're kind of doing the big reunion tag with Edge and Christian on this show.
No, I would definitely expect Paige to be in a singles match.
He should be, like, and I'd be very surprised if he was not. I think certainly TV you could do the tag, but this you know, if we end up getting Omega and Kyle Fletcher, that's a really big match. But I do not see Hangman with, like, Josh Alexander, for instance, even in Toronto. Yeah. All right, so there you go. That was Dynamite, a show that had some really great wrestling on the show, in particular that main event, but also a really spectacular tag title match. And Mercedes and Alex Windsor was pretty enjoyable as well. The only other match, there were only four matches on the show. Briscoe and Archer was kind of just your standard fare to set up Saturday's collision. And I guess the only thing is, I feel like they've introduced all these different directions, and just hopefully, like, you don't have the longest time. And I think, like, this pay-per-view, you really need to set everything in motion. So they, hopefully by next week, they've got pretty much most of the card locked down and not just waiting till, like, the week of to finalize all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. A strong show in ring. Strong show, I think, in terms of atmosphere as well.
How did you feel this many shows into the 2300 arena?
So I still like it, but much like, you know, the ballroom, I do think, like, many weeks at the same venue will start to wear thin. Especially because, like, you can only play up ECW nostalgia for several weeks, and they didn't even really do that. So all you're really kind of left with this week is just, I mean, it's a smaller crowd, right? And so I think I'll really start to feel it, especially for Collision, especially for the shows next week as well. So I really think they're kind of maxing out on just how much you could do at one single venue. But like you, John, I was hoping for a bit more clarity about, like, All Out and a lot of, like, destinations. And I'm honestly maybe even a little bit disappointed that, like, something like a Mercedes versus Riho was just kind of announced out of the blue without much reason, yeah. You know?
I'm just thinking to, like, granted, we haven't seen SmackDown yet, but I feel pretty confident that after SmackDown, it's like they're going to shoot some really big angles on SmackDown, and that's going to capture a lot of the audience that, okay, this is the show I'm watching on that night. And on Friday, like, you're not going to be able to be weighing the two. And I'm not saying you should be booking around WWE's booking schedule, but I think, like, you want to have that counter of, like, what's the other show that's going on? And it's, you know, maybe it's overthinking things, but I think, like, you're only 2 weeks out from this show, and I think you wanted less ambiguity, which is what you had coming out of the closing angle. All right, everybody. If you are on the free tier, then the show continues. We're going to be taking some feedback and questions. If you're here on the YouTube channel, you can consider joining at postwrestlingcafe.com. Again, we're going to be back on Thursday with Rewind Away, covering Survivor Series 1993. We also put out our final review of WWE Unreal, looking at the fifth and final episode of this past season and giving our overall view on Unreal, what worked over these five episodes, what did not work, and what adjustments we would want to see for future episodes of Unreal. So very, very fun chat that Wayne and I had going over this, this final series. And I like the way we broke things up rather than just pump these all out when they were first released.
As is usually the case, like, I think watching it, you know, is one thing, but I think discussing it is where I really start to learn something about maybe the experience, and I tend to enjoy the experience much more having had a conversation.
All right, so that's up now on the cafe, and Way and I are back on Friday night with Rewind to SmackDown, and I'll be joining Kate from Montreal Saturday night after Collision for the show happening again in Philadelphia. We'll see how Way feels about Philadelphia after next week's shows as well.
Yes,
pushing them. Okay, we move on over to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.